And what oftentimes happens in marriage, two people are married and they both think that the other is going to serve them. And they find out that they're both selfish, and it leads to a lot of unmet expectations and hurts and frustrations. So like they come to Jesus and they ask him this interesting question, you know, how do we be the greatest? And rather than rebuking them, he redirects them and he says, serve. And then he says that he didn't come to be served. That would be selfish. He came to serve and to give his whole life for us.
Well, howdy y'all. Pastor Mark here, welcoming you back to the Real Marriage Podcast. If you don't know, we got a brand new book, my wife Grace and I. It's called Real Romance, and it's on sex in the Song of Songs. And hey, if you're not having sex, we want help. If you're having sex, we want you to have more and better sex. And if you're doing really great, congratulations. You're officially a unicorn. The book is now available, and you can find all the details at realromancebook.com. And on today's episode, we'll be delving into the Song of Songs, the Real Romance Marriage Book, and try to help you spice up your love life, my friend.
And there is a phrase that couples tend to use, and that is that the honeymoon's over. That means now we are back to work. When you're on your honeymoon, it's great. You got nothing to worry about.
Yep.
You got no one to think about. It's just the two of you absolutely
focused
on one another. What would you like to do? What would make you happy today? And then the honeymoon's over. Well, this week in the Song of Solomon study, the honeymoon's over and they have their first fight. So the duties and the responsibilities and distractions of life have shown up. So for couples that are watching, how sort of curious do you find it that, you know, there's only so much that can be put in the Bible, and this is the great love story book on sex and romance and intimacy, and it takes an entire section and focuses on a fight.
It's reality. It's real romance.
Yeah.
That's what happens. If you don't fight, you probably aren't talking much. You got to discover each other and get to know each other, and there's going to be disagreements in that, and you got to learn to work that out and have the Lord help you figure it out in the midst of it.
Well, and sometimes it's important to have the conversation about how you're going to have the conversation, because oftentimes we'll just jump right in. And
right.
John Gottman, he has great predictive analysis of divorce, and he says that one of the things that contributes is a harsh startup.
Yep.
That a conversation starts, you know, very intensely, very emotionally, very personally. And sometimes you need to have a conversation about how you're going to have the conversation. Where are we going to have it? When are we going to have it? How are we going to have it? Journal out your thoughts. Pray. Not with the kids in the room. Not at the restaurant. Not at our parents' house over Thanksgiving dinner. We're not going to, you know, light the wick and blow it up there. And so couples are always going to have some things that are going to need to be resolved and worked through. And so if you are fighting, even right now, like if you're in the middle of a conflict, congratulations, you have a biblical marriage. There's a whole chapter on this. And the underlying issue, and we'll get into it in a moment, is that they're both being selfish. And in every marriage, we live on a continuum from servant to selfish. And so one of your spiritual gifts is serving. So maybe talk about what it is to be a servant and have a servant mindset. I can't illustrate this because this is not my spiritual gift. I have the spiritual gift of being served, which is why we get along so well. You have more the spiritual gift of serving. What does serving look like for you?
It's asking, figuring out what you want, not just what I think you want, and then serving you in that way, or serving whoever we're talking about, but in context of marriage, serving you. In the early parts of the marriage, I loved serving, but I didn't always figure out how you wanted to be served first. And so I was tirelessly serving and you didn't feel served because it wasn't meeting the needs that you specifically had. And so it's really important to distinguish what their needs are, what, and that changes throughout your marriage. So you can't just day one serve in one way and the last day be serving the same way, because there's usually some alteration of that throughout the marriage. But it's really figuring that out and just having the conversation, how can I best serve you in this? How can I be a friend to you right now? How can I love you right now? How can I minister to you right now? You know, do you need comfort? Do you need just a listening ear? Do you need someone to just sit with you and
be
present?
For me, it's often ministry of presence, just having you around. And sometimes, like Mary and Martha, you know, Martha's the one that is busy mm-hmm. and Mary's the one who hangs out with Jesus. Yes. You're more Mary and less Martha.
No, I'm
you're more Martha, Martha. Less Mary.
Because I serve, but sometimes serving can be a sin if I'm not focused in my serving.
Oh, and for me, when we first got married, you were very much a servant. And so, you know, home responsibilities and all the tasks and chores, you were very, and still are very diligent, very dutiful. And then we started adding kids, and I didn't clue in that I should be helping as much. And so I wasn't very helpful. And there were years there where you were doing a lot of the practical mm-hmm. and I wasn't. I was busy working. I would come home.
You were providing, which was amazing, so that I could be home.
Yeah, but then I would come home, and I would be more selfish. Mm-hmm. And I'm not thinking about, she's been home with five kids all day. You know, there's all these tasks and chores and responsibilities, because you were very dutiful, and you didn't complain a lot.
I grumbled in my heart.
Did you?
Yes.
Oh, I forgive you for that. I need to start doing that, because I only grumble out here, and it's more painful. And so we all live in a continuum of servant to selfish, and there are certain areas, even in the marriage, we may serve in one area but be selfish mm-hmm. in another.
Yep.
So it may be, you know, I'm very, you know, some people, it can be in or out of the bedroom. They're mm-hmm. selfish in one area and yep. a servant in the other. And the Bible only has good things to say about serving, and it has only bad things to say about being selfish. Mm-hmm. And what oftentimes happens in marriage, two people are married and they both think that the other is going to serve them, and they find out that they're both selfish, and it leads to a lot of unmet expectations and hurts and frustrations. Exactly. So like they come to Jesus and they ask him this interesting question, you know, how do we be the greatest? And rather than rebuking them, he redirects them and he says, serve. Mm-hmm. And then he says that he didn't come to be served. That would be selfish. He came to serve and to give his whole life for us. And so what we like to say is that that there are three kinds of marriages. There are two selfish people. That's a brutal marriage. It's taking,
constant war,
conflict,
using.
I win, you lose. Mm-hmm. It's using and oftentimes abusing. Mm-hmm. A selfish person with a servant is an abusive marriage. Mm-hmm. You give, I take, you lose, I win. You consider me, and I'm inconsiderate toward you. Mm-hmm. Two servants is really a beautiful marriage.
Yeah.
When one person says, I'm going to do what's best for you, and the other says, I'm going to do what's best for you.
And you both get your needs met.
You both get your needs met, and it's a healthy, safe marriage. You mm-hmm. don't have to defend yourself, because you can trust that your spouse has your best interest in heart. And most marriages that end in divorce, they do so within the first 7 years. Mm-hmm. You've heard about the seven-year itch. It's a real thing.
Yeah.
And they say that it takes between 9 and 14 years, the marriage experts and sociologists do, for a couple to go from being selfish to start being servants.
Wow.
And so what oftentimes happens is two selfish people get married. It doesn't work out. And so then they end it, and then they start over. And they find out, oh, this person's selfish too. And our issue is you can have a new marriage with the same spouse. That sometimes you need a new marriage, but that doesn't mean you need a new spouse. Mm-hmm. That if you both put on the attitude of Jesus, of servant, mm-hmm. and come in to serve one another, you'll have a good marriage. So here's their fight where they're both being selfish. And so you can read what she has to say, and then I'll read what their friends have to say.
Chapter 5, verse 2. I slept, but my heart was awake. She was troubled. Listen, my beloved is knocking. Open to me, my sister, my darling, my dove, my flawless one. My head is drenched with dew, my hair with the dampness of the night. I have taken off my robe. Must I put it on again? I have washed my feet. Must I soil them again? My beloved thrust his hand through the latch opening. My heart began to pound for him. I arose to open for my beloved, and my hands dripped with myrrh, my fingers with flowing myrrh on the handles of the bolt. I opened for my beloved, but my beloved had left. He was gone. My heart sank at his departure. I looked for him, but did not find him. I called him, but he did not answer. The watchmen found me as they made their rounds in the city. They beat me. They bruised me. They took away my cloak, those watchmen of the walls. Daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you, if you find my beloved, what will you tell him? Tell him I am faint with love.
So then she brings in the wise counsel. So mm-hmm. here comes the Hebrew psychologist who says, how is your beloved better than others, most beautiful of women? How is your beloved better than others that you so charge us? And the man doesn't speak here, because they had a fight and they're separated. You can only have a conversation when you're together. So she here is doing all the talking.
My beloved is radiant and ruddy, outstanding among 10,000. His head is purest gold. His hair is wavy and black as a raven. His eyes are like doves by the water streams, washed in milk, mounted like jewels. His cheeks are like beds of spice, yielding perfume. His lips are like lilies dripping with myrrh. His arms are rods of gold set with topaz. His body is like polished ivory, decorated with lapis lazuli. His legs are pillars of marble set on bases of pure gold. His appearance is like Lebanon, choice as its cedars. His mouth is sweetness itself. He is altogether lovely. This is my beloved. This is my friend, daughters of Jerusalem.
He's got a gym membership. And then the wise counsel speaks, where has your beloved gone, most beautiful of women? Which way did your beloved turn that we may look for him with you? So let's unpack this. So what happens is they're both being selfish. Mm-hmm. And most fights are one or two people being selfish. So he's working all night. And it says that he comes when the dew is out in the morning. So literally, this is just around sunrise. And so he's literally been out all night, probably at work, really devoted to all of his responsibilities. But he doesn't come home for dinner. He doesn't tell her what he's doing. He doesn't consider her. He's just very busy and selfish. So then she, too, is very, very selfish.
I can't put my robe back on. Oh, yeah. My feet'll get dirty.
These are lame excuses. So he comes home. He's trying to pick the lock to the bedroom because not only did she go to bed without him, she locked the door. This is a little passive aggressive.
Yes.
This is.
You're going to be gone. I'm going to lock the door.
So he comes home and he's knocking on the door and she's kind of half awake, half asleep. There is a debate as to whether or not she woke up and went looking for him, or she's having sort of a dream sequence when you're kind of in and out of kind of that awareness state. Because she says, I went into the city and they beat me. And it's like, so the commentators debate here. They're like, would the queen just sort of go on her own in the middle of the night and no security would follow her? So it may be a dream sequence. But nonetheless, she's being selfish. She goes to bed. She locks the door. She's punishing him. Mm-hmm. It's that passive aggressive punishment. Not that you've ever done that, but this is for those people that are watching that may have experienced this in their marriage.
I haven't.
Oh my gosh. All right. We're going to do a series on the Ten Commandments after this in line. And so then he's knocking on the door. He's trying to pick the lock, and it may be a double entendre. I can't get into all the Hebrew, but the language there is used elsewhere in Old Testament prophets about sexual intimacy. And so there's probably a double entendre there. And eventually he gets very frustrated and he gives up and he leaves. Mm-hmm. And John Gottman, again, the researcher who studied marriage and come to some great conclusions, he would call this stonewalling. That stonewalling is where you don't talk, you don't work it out, and most of the time that stonewalling occurs, it's the man. He leaves. This is where the guy gets in the car and drives away, or gets in the truck and drives away, or he goes out to the man cave, or he goes out to do chores or chop wood, or he goes out to his garage, and he literally is like, that's it, I'm done. And so he ends the conversation and he ends the ability to reconcile. And that's what he does here. So the whole time in this whole section of the fight, he doesn't say anything because he's gone. He is stonewalling. He is out. I did this a lot early in our marriage. Mm-hmm. If I got frustrated, I wouldn't talk to you. I would leave, or I would stay at work, or I would find somewhere else to be or something else to do. True or false?
Yeah.
True. Okay, so I confess that publicly. It was wrong. But then she's being very selfish as well. He's knocking on the door. He's trying to get in. Yeah. And she's got lame excuses. Her first excuse is, I can't get up. I'm naked. Like, he's like, well, I'm trying to get in. That's a lame excuse. That's really sort of mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then she says, oh, I don't want to get my feet all dirty. So she's a princess who lives in a palace. My guess is
servants to wash her feet.
Well, and she has servants to clean her house.
That's
so I'm sure, you know, they're not camping in a tent.
Right.
And there's mud outside.
Right.
I mean, so she's being very, very selfish. And so what she does then, he won't talk to her. Now, he shouldn't be talking to her. But then she goes and seeks wise counsel. So when you're in a fight, and or there's stonewalling occurring, how how important is it to go to your wise counsel and have your wise counsel predetermined?
Well, I mean, if you go to a friend that wants to listen and pass on gossip, that's not going to be healthy for you.
So a gossip is not wise counsel. Somebody who just always takes your side.
Mm-hmm. Need someone who empathizes, but again, points you to Jesus and unity in your marriage, working things out.
And so oftentimes people don't sense a strong need for wise counsel. This can be a mentor, this could be a pastor, this could be a Christian counselor, until there is a crisis in the relationship. The problem is, I mean, it's never too late, but it is better to choose your wise counsel before your crisis.
Yeah,
so get your counsel before your crisis so that they know you, they know your relationship, they're up to speed. Mm-hmm. So that they can then give the best counsel and advice. Otherwise, what happens is sometimes a crisis or a conflict happens in a marriage and you're rushing to bring someone in, but they don't know the two of you. Maybe the other person is gone. They've not met them. They've not had communication with them. And it becomes very, very hard to do crisis counseling with total strangers.
Yeah.
And this is where oftentimes people will run into the church and they're like, we're in crisis, fix it now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, we're here to help. But like the check engine lights have been on.
Yeah.
Smoke has been coming out from underneath the hood. And you've been push starting it for months. And so, you know, it would have been the sooner you can start to fix the problems, the less catastrophic they might become. And so she tags in the wise counsel.
Mm-hmm.
And so our question again over and over would be for you who are watching, like, who is that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know the guys that I would call, you know the gals that you would call, we know the couples that we would confide in. And so what she does then, she tags in the wise counsel, and then she reminds herself of the things that she loves and appreciates about her husband.
Yeah, which is good. Because we have to remind ourselves of truth in the moment of when we're frustrated or hurt. We need to remind ourselves of who we actually love, how God brought us together, and the true story of, and not create a new narrative that's negative about our spouse. Not respond out of emotion, but remember to go back to the frontal lobe and logic and think through and process and wisdom in that moment. And so she's wanting that with her friends, but she's wanting to remind herself, okay, I do love this man. I am attracted to this man. I messed up, but how do I find him?